Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson filling in for Leo Laporte, and this is the Tech Guy Podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, July 6th, 2014, on the Premier Networks. This is episode 1098. Enjoy!
The Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at gazelle.com.
Well, hey, everybody. How you doing today? Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who's off on a lovely vacation. And who can blame him? He works so hard here at the TWiT Studios, the Brick House, as we call it, that he deserves a vacation once in a while, I guess. Sure, why not? Anyway, it gives me an opportunity to come and talk to all you fine folks about home theater. Of course, Leo's a generalist. He talks about anything with a chip in it, but I'm more of a specialist. I talk about home theater, audio, video stuff, the movies, going out to the movies even. I really enjoy all forms of audio, video technology. And joining me in the co-pilot seat today is my good friend and fellow home theater geek, David Vaughn. David.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so glad to have you here. David is a review writer for Sound and Vision. And generally a home theater geek. You've had a home theater for a long time now.
Yep, long time, since the 90s.
Wow, even before there were home theaters.
Well, the first one was a 27-inch TV with really big speakers.
Okay. All right, but since then you've graduated to a really nice projection system, really nice surround system. You mostly review speakers, AV receivers, Blu-ray players,
yep.
Right about that?
Yep. No projectors. There's other people who handle that task.
There's an awful lot of writers at Sound and Vision.
Yes. When Sound and Vision and Home Theater merged, we kind of doubled the staff. And so, you know, work doesn't come along as often, which sometimes can be good.
Sometimes,
A little bit more free time. But I'll generally do 6 to 8 pieces a year, and then a movie review every month.
Movie reviews. Yes. Very important. You haven't had a chance probably to see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
No, not yet.
Okay. You saw my review
of
that.
Yes, I did see your review of that on AVS forums, and I definitely want to see it. I really like the first movie a lot. So.
Yeah, I did too. And this one is a worthy sequel to that.
Yeah, the trailers had me a little worried. Apes carrying, AK-47s, but...
and riding horses.
Yeah, and riding horses.
But they did in the original.
They did in the original, yes. The motion capture is unbelievable on that.
Yep.
It, really well done.
Well, we'll get into all that sort of stuff in the next 3 hours, and I do hope you will join us. All you have to do is pick up your phone and call 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. And when you do that, you will first talk with Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. Hi-ho, Leo, away! Hey, Heather, welcome. So glad to see you.
Thanks. Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's our first weekend working together, and hopefully not the last.
I didn't scare the crap out of you, so you ran away and didn't come back?
Not a chance. Had a great time. You're fabulous at what you do, and always glad to have you here, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, you know what? We got a call yesterday. I really wanted to talk about it a little bit, because it was something that I didn't know as much about as I should. And it had to do with Android, streaming from an Android device, like a tablet or a smartphone, to a TV. And, you know, I'm an Apple guy myself. I think you're an Android guy, David, aren't you?
I have an Android phone.
Uh-huh. And someone said, well, how do you do it? And I kind of said, well, you probably should use Chromecast, right? Well, you would think Android's a Google thing. Chromecast is a Google thing. Why shouldn't it work? Well, it kind of doesn't. It kind of does, though. I did some research last night, and I found out that you need something of a set-top box, like a Roku or Amazon Fire TV would be another one, or even the Chromecast will work if you have an app called AllCast. This is the key that I didn't know because I'm not an Android guy. My wife has an Android tablet, and I'm going to start using that now because I really need to get more familiar with it than I am. But it turns out that there's this app called AllCast, which lets you cast mirror, really, your Android device onto the Chromecast, although apparently that doesn't work 100%, and also the Amazon Fire TV and Roku and so on. There's another system that one can use called MiraCast, MiraCast. It's its own streaming system, similar to AirPlay. But what's interesting about it is it does not require a Wi-Fi network. It sets up its own wireless streaming directly, sort of a private network through a protocol that is available in Android 4.0 and later. It's called Wi-Fi Direct. So it's sort of Wi-Fi, but it doesn't use up the bandwidth on your Wi-Fi on your Wi-Fi stream network in your house. So these are two different ways to do it. I'm reading here about it. The problem is that MiraCast anyway relies on your Android device to stream the stuff, so it's very battery intensive.
Oh yeah.
Now, you were telling me, David, that you found something proprietary with Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung has an app that will stream to their TVs and their Blu-ray players that will mirror whatever's on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing. 5 minutes into it, you feel the back of your phone, and it's hot as can be because it's draining the battery as you go.
Right.
You know, I think it would be fine for a couple minute video clip that you shot at the fireworks for July 4th or something, but to use it to watch a movie or something, I don't think it's gonna, your battery wouldn't last that long.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I wanted to make sure we did talk about this a little bit yesterday. Mike Heiss in the chat room, another home theater geek, by the way, and a friend of ours who has been on my podcast, talked about how at the Google I.O. event, which was, I guess, a month or so ago, they announced native streaming or mirroring from Android devices, mobile devices, directly to Chromecast without having to go through this AllCast app. Straight up mirroring. So we can look forward to that. But, I suppose that's one reason I'm more of an Apple guy, an iOS guy, is that this all just works. There's iOS, there's AirPlay. As long as I have an Apple TV, I can just cast directly from, my iPhone and iPad. No problem.
Theoretically.
Well, that I've done. That I have experience with. And it hasn't been a problem for me at all.
My Pre-Pro has AirPlay. It'll you could stream music to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, when we needed it for a party, it didn't want to work.
Oh, man. Well, technology. Can't live with it. Can't throw it out the window.
Oh, yeah. You can, but it just comes right back at you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The wind just blows it right back and hits you in the face. Well, anyway, I just wanted to make sure I got that out of the way because it was a call that I didn't handle or didn't know as much as I should have. So I want to make sure I get that out there. I hope the fellow who called is listening today because that is the answer to the question. Now, if you have a question, as I said before, you call 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. But that's not the only way to get to us. You can also join the chat room. The chat room is at irc.twit.tv. You can go there directly, or you can go to the website of the radio show, techguylabs.com, and find a button or click there for getting into the chat room. And I do hope you'll join us because it's a really fun place to hang out. It's what Leo calls his brain. And it was my brain yesterday too because I got a lot of great feedback and information coming at me during the show. Leo also calls them the kids at the back of the class. But the good news is that they aren't shooting spitballs at me. So please do come on in, join the chat room. It's fully moderated, so totally family friendly, and loads of fun to hang out in there. And I do monitor that during the show. So I think that's about it. Look at that. Perfect.
Perfect timing.
We'll be right back. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Very good. Nathan, our music director, has picked a perfect song to come in from the break. This is Scott Wilkinson, by the way, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we have a guest in the studio today. His name is Adam. He's originally from London, thus the song we just heard, living now in Los Gatos, one of my favorite places. Beautiful spot here in Northern California. Central California, I guess you'd want really more say.
The Bay Area, South Bay.
South Bay Area, anyway, yeah. And we were just talking about London because you've been there.
Yep.
I've been there. My wife's going there next month to present a paper. So, you know, there's a lot of London floating around the air here. And as you said, the ethnic food there is very good, but the British native food, maybe not so much. And Adam happens to agree with us. certainly some of the best Indian food I've ever had was in London, definitely. Well, you know what? I think it's time to take a call.
Definitely.
So, Heather, who have we got?
Pete in Fullerton, California.
Pete in Fullerton, California. Let me make sure I got the right button pushed. And, Pete, you're on. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek with David Vaughn. Welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Scott.
Hey.
You know, I've got a question for you. I'm believing in January you were talking about this, and I listen to the show every weekend doing yard work Saturday and Sunday.
A good thing to do while doing yard work. Excellent.
Yeah, it's great. So I missed the first part of it, and my question, you guys were talking about AV receivers. I have this Denon AV receiver, but it was before they came. It was for the 5-to-1s before they had the high definition. And I thought you had said that there's something now that you can put in between if you have, because I hate to throw that receiver away, it was so expensive, that you can use with an high-definition TV. There's something you can put in between for HDMI.
Oh, so this dead-on receiver is so old it doesn't have HDMI?
Right. It's a 5-to-1 AV receiver, but it's
5.1, I think, is what you mean.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to send high definition from the receiver. You've got your components, your Blu-ray player or whatever connected to this receiver, although I'm not quite sure how.
No, I haven't done anything with the receiver because it won't work right now with high definition. So I could have sworn when I was coming back to the front yard, you were talking about a device that worked with the old receivers that you could update it to work with the new with the HDMI high definition TVs.
Well, you can. There are devices that convert different kinds of video signals to HDMI. In particular, there's an older type of analog video signal called component,
right?
Which is represented on the back of the receiver with three plugs, three RCA connectors that are color coded red, green, and blue.
But that won't give you high definition, though, will it?
It will.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. To a certain degree. I believe it might be limited to 1080i. David, do you remember?
Well,
we're going back in history here a little bit.
We're past that. Well, one thing you could do is just run the HDMI direct to your TV and then run, you know, an optical or coaxial cable to your receiver.
You could. And now let me ask you this. What TV do you have?
It's a Sony 47-inch.
Okay, how old is it?
Probably like 3 years old.
So it has HDMI.
It has HDMI.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, and what kind of source devices do you have? A cable box, satellite box, Roku, game console, Blu-ray player? What?
It would just be a Blu-ray player and the cable box.
Okay. So David's exactly right. Probably the best thing for you to do in order to use this receiver is to take the HDMI out from the cable box and the Blu-ray player, plug them into HDMI inputs on the TV.
Okay.
And then take that TV, undoubtedly, virtually all TVs have an optical audio output, a digital audio output.
Right, it does.
Okay, and you run that to your receiver.
I had thought I'd heard if you do it that way, sometimes the video and audio don't link.
No, that's not the problem. The lip sync usually is fine. There might be a control in the TV to adjust that if it isn't. But the bigger problem is that more often than not, when you do it that way, the TV takes a 5.1 surround signal and down mixes it to two channels.
So
what comes out of the optical output is two channels only. And then if your receiver may be able to then sort of re-expand it artificially, synthetically, to 5.1, but it won't be the native 5.1 soundtrack.
Okay.
The other thing you could also do is go out of your Blu-ray player and your, you know, cable or satellite box directly to your AVR.
From the optical
out.
The optical out there.
That'll carry 5.1 channels.
There you go.
And then you could have, you can work the lip sync delay and all that and get it all synced up.
Right. But the problem there is that that's a complex setup. That means you have to be switching inputs on the TV and on the receiver. It's kind of a kludge. But you've got an old receiver, so you've got to expect that you're going to be a bit of a kludge there.
So there was nothing in between then that would solve the HDMI connection problem where I was thinking I had heard you say that there was a box now that you could put in between and it would solve the problem with the receiver not having HDMI.
No, I don't remember saying that. Okay. Of course, my brain is a FIFO buffer, right? First in, first out.
Conversation. That's why I was missing. I got the back end, and that's what I've been wondering.
Yeah, there is a box. It's called a new receiver.
Yeah.
That has HDMI.
This is going to be my primary recommendation to you, is to buy a new receiver.
Okay.
And Denon is a great make. I love Denon receivers. I have no problem with them whatsoever. And I would definitely recommend upgrading your receiver.
I just hated to throw it away because it was pretty darn expensive.
Well, sure, I understand that, but maybe there's a second room, you know, that you could put it in, or make use of it somehow if you have kids. You know, maybe one's going off to college or something, and they could take it with them and use it that way. Is another way. There's always a way to use old equipment. Well, almost always.
Right.
Can I ask you a really quick one?
Sure.
It's another stereo receiver issue. My stereo receiver for outside that handles speakers for the front yard and backyard, it blew up last year. So I put another receiver out there in that place, and it plays A speakers alone, plays B speakers alone, but it won't play A and B together. In the back, it's getting like 50% of the information in the back, and I can't solve that one.
How old is that receiver?
I don't know, five years or more.
Is there a button on it that will activate both the A and B speakers at the same time?
You have to press either A, B, or both to get. If you want both in, you press both A and B in.
My impression is it's probably trying to power too much at once, that the receiver is not really powerful enough to handle what you're trying to do. You know, it says A and B, but you're also running really long cables, right?
That's true. To the backyard, I am.
So that's going to be a problem, too, for speaker levels. So I would say you just have an underpowered receiver in that case.
Okay. Hey, I thank you a lot.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You know, we're just out of time on this segment. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about receivers, Onkyo in particular. We talked a lot about Onkyo yesterday. And so when we come back, we will spend a moment on that. For now, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And here we are on the radio. Great selection, Nathan. Thank you so much. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I'm here with David Vaughn, my friend and fellow home theater geek. And we were going to talk a little bit about receivers. That was the last call, was talking about receivers. And yesterday, we talked a lot about receivers and Onkyo in particular. And I said at that time that, you know, some people hate them. Some people love them. They are not universally loved. And you had something to say about that.
Yeah. I mean, I was a very loyal Onkyo Integra guy.
We should say those two brands are related.
Yes.
Integra is kind of the higher end. It's kind of like the
custom install.
Yeah. I was thinking of the cars, the Toyota and
Lexus.
Lexus. Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Back in 2001, I bought a TXDS 989, their flagship receiver. That cost way more than it should have at that time. But and that was my first foray into high-end home theater audio was with that receiver. And I upgraded every couple years to a different Onkyo or Integra model. And then I got about 2.5 years ago, I was doing a review of one, and the first one that showed up was bad. And the second one that showed up, I had a problem with it about a month in. And they thought it was something with my setup, and I said, no, there is something wrong with this. There's an HDMI problem. And sure enough, 3 months later, AVS forums started blowing up with HDMI problem after HDMI problem.
On Onkyo receivers.
On Onkyo receivers, yeah. And Integra Pre-Pros. The good point is that Onkyo Integra stood behind them and they repaired them. But, you know, I have friends that have multiple failures. Mm-hmm. They would send it in, get it repaired. 3 months later, they have to send it back and another repaired. And so that kind of soiled me on the brand a little bit, and now I have a Marantz.
and I don't think I've heard anybody badmouth Marantz or have any problems with Marantz or Denon. Or Pioneer, really. So those are kind of the brands that I now recommend mostly. I, like you, used to recommend Onkyo all the time, and then I started seeing all these problems, yep. All these reports. And I just thought, boy, I don't know. And it's only been in the last few years that Onkyo, that these problems have really started to crop up more and more.
Yeah, about the last 2 or 3 years has been bad. You know, and unfortunately, part of that is, you know, the prices have held pretty steady. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the pricing, they've added more features. Right. Well, when you look at that, you know, that means they're probably using slightly cheaper parts.
Right.
And, you know, things like that happen.
In fact, Untoward in the chat room is saying the caps go bad, the capacitors, yep. Which could very well be. I mean, you know, if you use cheap parts, components, electronic components inside, you're more likely to have failures.
Yep.
So, and you're right. If the prices stay the same and the features go up, something's got to give somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been impressed really in the $500 to $700 range. Mm-hmm. You get great value.
Yes, I totally agree.
In that range.
I totally
you may
agree.
Give up a feature or two, but mm-hmm. they may be features you
might
aren't going to use.
Anyway, yeah.
And then there's a couple of pre-pros from Emotiva and Outlaw Audio mm-hmm. that are basically stripped down pre-pros but deliver phenomenal value.
Pre-pro, by the way, is preamp processor. It's basically an AV receiver without the amplifiers.
Correct.
So you have to put the amplifiers, you have to get the amplifiers separately. But the good news there is that if one or the other of them go bad, you don't have to replace all of that all at once.
Exactly. Or you can get amplifiers that mate really well with your speakers.
Right.
And it makes a real good combination.
Right. And you can keep those for a long time, typically, and upgrade the pre-pro.
Exactly.
If something new comes along, like 4K.
Yep.
Which we'll talk about later in the show. But for now, let's see if we can get another call in. Heather, who we got? Oh, I caught her by surprise.
This is a really fun question. Charles in New York City is wondering why he thinks he heard something that wasn't recorded in stereo in stereo.
Wait a second. What? Whoops. There we go. Hello? Pushing the right buttons. Hey, Charles. It's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I'm rushing to work. Pleasure to speak with you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Yes, it's been driving me crazy for a while. First, I noticed it through the streaming with Netflix, like certain old movies. I hear it trying to decode in stereo from left to right, right to left, so forth. And I thought maybe there was some new technology that Netflix was using. And I recently started noticing that my Blu-ray disc, I'm hearing the same thing. Now, is it that the receiver is decoding the movie and playing it back that way?
Well, what do you mean exactly by left and right? I mean, are you talking about sounds that pan from left to right aren't sounding smooth or as they're supposed to, or?
No. They're sounds that's panning left to right, like the movie was recorded in stereo, and we all know that movies back in the early 70s, take, for instance, like The French Connection. I'm actually hearing a panning from left to right.
Hearing a panning. I'm not still quite sure what you mean by that. I mean, if some sound moves from right to left, you're going to hear it move from right to left. Is that what you mean?
I think what he's saying is that it was originally recorded in mono, and how is he getting a pan if something mono? Is that correct?
Correct.
Ah, okay.
Certain movies, they've gone back and actually remixed them. The French Connection is one of those movies. They went back and they took the original audio elements and they created a 5.1 soundtrack for the Blu-ray. Now, Netflix may have taken that and down-res the original 5.1. That I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, what about the movies I hear playing on TMC or CCM? A lot of the old movies I'm also hearing, not exactly in stereo, but like a high fidelity, like let's say a club scene, for instance, if they're playing like an old movie and they're in a club or a bar, I'm hearing the ambience of that type of large room.
Well, that might have been in the original soundtrack. I'm so sorry, you've got a lot of wind noise going on there. But that might have been in the original soundtrack. They might have enhanced the original soundtrack with some new sound effects, possibly.
Or it could be his receiver applying Dolby Pro Logic to it, taking the signal and creating a Pro Logic mix out of it. Because Pro Logic works on specific frequency ranges, and it's pulling those frequency ranges that are background noise and creating background noise.
Well, that may be, too. You're playing it through a receiver?
I'm playing it through a Marantz receiver through the normal mode. I'm not using...
You're not using Dolby Pro Logic.
I'm using, like, just a normal mode of not adding, the effects that come with these AVR receivers.
Yeah. Right. No, you're not using, like, jazz or club or one of those weird modes that I never recommend. But Dolby Pro Logic, sometimes Dolby Pro Logic can take a stereo signal, two-channel signal, and spread it out over 5.1, and that might in fact enhance or accentuate certain frequencies. That might be what you're hearing.
Yeah, that's amazing to me, considering these movies were made, even the Seven Ups, which I believe was made in 1969.
I'm sorry, which one was that?
The Seven Ups.
I don't know that one.
The Seven Ups. I think the same director that done the French Connection done the Seven Ups also. Those movies, same thing. They sound like they're in stereo, but they weren't recorded in stereo.
Right. Well, they were probably remixed in stereo when they were released on TCM or Netflix or whatever. There certainly is a whole purist movement about keep it exactly as it was when it was originally made. There are people who object to colorizing black and white movies.
Right.
We were talking last night about Star Trek, the original series, when it was released on Blu-ray, they redid all the special effects so the planets look more real. Hey, thanks so much for the call. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, we're not slowing this Mustang down, no way. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, with David Vaughn, a fellow home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I think we should go right to another call, don't you?
Definitely.
Heather, who we got?
Tom in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Your opinions on something.
Oh, I'm nothing if not opinionated. Hey, Tom, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How are you?
No good. No wrong or right answers.
Absolutely. Well, there are some right answers and some wrong answers, but we'll
let that. You're talking about these ultra, 3D free light field technologies, and for 4K next year, who knows? Maybe we'll be 16K in 3 years.
Right. They are already talking. They all the Japanese anyway are already talking about 8K.
Right, and 32 million color palettes and all these good things.
Yep.
Now, a little bit of background: as you remember, in the 80s, they built. Started to put together the digital broadcast standards. They looked at FM radio, and lo and behold, there was enough signal space in unused FM audio subcarriers. They said, hey, we'll leave the analog FM alone. We'll just put the so-called HD FM in the subcarriers, and nobody has to change the radios. Go out and buy an HD radio if you want.
Right.
They did the same thing, and I talked because I do over-the-air tuning. And I talked to an FCC engineer, and I said, why didn't they do the same thing with high definition? Well, as you remember, if you go back into the late 40s, early 50s, they used a subcarrier up to carry the color vectors, so they leave everybody's black and white set run analog unchanged.
And in order to make it backward compatible.
Right.
Exactly right. Which also led
to the 80s, they said, hey, let's try to do it. Lo and behold, one of the subcarriers is already used up. There's a few others left. they couldn't put all the digital signal information in the remaining subcarriers. The result was basically dig up the whole freeway, take the divider out, make the lanes wider, and clean out the trough and make everything new and improved and resurface it and everything. And that's why everybody had to buy either a converter box or go out and buy an HTC. Now the question is, and I know there's a finite signal capacity of 6 megahertz wide in a video TV signal.
That's right. That is the broadcast bandwidth, the width of each channel that the information can be sent along, and that's been true for a long, long time.
Right. And not to mention the FCC has chopped down the top of the broadcast TV band UHF to be 900 megahertz, is now down to 500. And they've used the space for other things, so they scrunched all the TV stations in the country down into the low 500s because the signal only goes 40 miles. But the point here is, as we go through time and we get more and more of these new formats, I don't know what the width of the signal is on satellite, I don't know what it is on cable, maybe you do, but aren't we going to be faced with a world of essentially all these ultra formats are going to essentially be relegated to a box in your home and some special disc that you buy, and you connect it to your set. You're never going to be able to see this stuff over the air.
Well, that's not entirely true. I mean, you make a very good point that Ultra HD has four times as many pixels as HD. It's going to have potentially a lot more information than HD in terms of dynamic range and color and bit depth and all that kind of stuff. And how is that going to get squeezed into a broadcast channel? This is one of the big questions.
Right.
Now, at NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters Conference, this year, the Japanese NHT, the Japanese Public Broadcasting System, was demonstrating broadcasting 8K, which is yet beyond the 4K standard coming up, in a normal broadcast channel. But they were doing it across a booth, right? So it was, maybe a dozen feet or two.
Yeah.
It wasn't over 40 miles. Now, they said that they had been doing some testing in Japan, and they had managed to reach, I think, 17 miles, something like that. So, okay. So, they're working on it. Part of the solution to that problem is compression, or what is called video coding.
Don't you contaminate the quality of the video signal? When you talk upscaling and compression and interpolation, I was a math major in college. Wonderful techniques. They try to put something there that's not there, but aren't you compromising the quality of the signal?
You are, but in terms of taking a 4K signal, one of these really ultra signals that you're talking about, and pumping it through a broadcast channel, you're not talking about adding or interpolating information. You're just talking about squeezing it down and removing as much information as you possibly can in order for it to fit in a given pipe. And the pipe for broadcast is very small, and so you'd have to really, really compress it down a lot. And you are going to sacrifice quality with that, no question about it. But because of all this, what you're talking about in the broadcast realm, that's why Ultra HD is not going to be over-the-air broadcast anytime soon.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be delivered online. It's going to be delivered by streaming and or downloading.
Yeah.
Right? So you're going to be...
Let it cook all night, then...
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you stream it, if you do a live stream, you can do that now. Netflix is streaming House of Cards. YouTube has a bunch of content, actually, in 4K now. And other companies, MGO, I think, and some others have announced that they're going to start streaming 4K. That's got to be compressed within an inch of its life.
Yeah.
Because the bandwidth coming into most homes is, I think, the per capita income, the per capita bandwidth in the U.S. is something like 3 megabits per second. Now, certainly some of us have more than that. My colleague at AVS Forum, Mark Henninger, has 100 megabits coming into his house, more than.
Wow.
So, boy, if you got that, you're in good shape. But most of us don't.
Right.
And if you do have that, you're paying for it, right?
Yep.
So,
well, I mean, if you look, I mean, the current over-the-air standards, MPEG-2,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean...
That's the codec now.
The codec.
That we're talking about. Codec stands for coder, decoder, and it's a way of compressing, throwing out a bunch of information in order to fit that signal down the pipe. And MPEG-2 is what we're using now for broadcast.
Right.
It's very old.
Very old and not very efficient compared to, AVC.
AVC.
H.264, now H.265.
Right.
So, I mean, the math gets better, the computers get faster, and
right. That's exactly right. And that is the salvation, I think, of Ultra HD as a streaming medium. We have stronger, more powerful processors, memory's cheaper, and bandwidth increases over time. I mean, the infrastructure in the U.S. for getting that stuff from the provider to your home is going to require, as somebody once said, you know, hard hats and pickaxes.
Right.
You're going to have to dig up the streets and put down better cable.
And get ready to pay for it, because
yes.
Comcast and Time Warner, as Leo likes to call them, the evil empires of the world, they want to charge us for every bit that comes into our house. That's how they're going to separate us from our money.
Right on. I mean, just by reference, I have an LG 47-inch smart TV. I don't have cable. I look at it line of sight 4 miles to the mountains where the broadcasting towers are. And I'll tell you, you look at Macy's Parade, you look at Tournament of Roses Parade, you know, in high definition, picture just blows you away. I look at it in other people's around here on cable, you know, and I wouldn't give two nickels for it. Yeah.
Well, I've always said that broadcast HD is really among the best looking HD you can get, except for Blu-ray.
Right.
I would say, you know, Blu-ray is the gold standard.
Best, yeah.
But in terms of receiving content into your home from outside, over-the-air broadcasting really does look the best on HD. Now, whether that will remain true with UHD, Ultra HD, or 4K, remains to be seen. And we're not going to see it for a while.
Yeah.
It's going to be streamed. It's going to be downloaded. We're going to have a 4K disc format probably sometime next year.
Yeah.
But, you know, as Leo is fond of saying, you know, physical media is dead. And certainly Blu-ray sales are dropping. And so, you know, people are, again, opting for convenience over
quality,
which I think is going to be the way of the future, right? It happened with audio. We had SACD and we had DVD audio, both disc formats producing better music, better quality audio than CD could do. Both of them failed in favor of MP3,
right?
Which throws away 90% of the audio data in order to have it be a very low, small file that can be squirted across the internet easily. So, and stored, you know, you can store 10,000 songs on your little portable.
If it were to come to be broadcast of 4K TV, would it still be downward compatible to the sets that are out there now?
Ooh, you know, that's another great question. I don't know the answer to that. Certainly, for the transition from black and white to color, it was downward compatible, compatible. The transition from analog to digital was not backward compatible. As you say, you needed a converter box.
Yeah, and
you didn't need it for FM radio because there was unused space.
Right.
Yeah, I would be surprised if in the next 10 years we have 4K broadcast.
Okay.
Personally.
All right.
Hey, thanks so much for the call. I really appreciate it. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, you know what? I think Leo's in the other room, and he's got something to tell us.
Hope you're enjoying Scott. Thank you, Scott, for filling in for me on the Tech Guy Show. I'm in Hawaii basking in the sun, but I had to come back to remind you that Gazelle is waiting to hear from you. Have you gazelled your gadgets yet? You know, there's gold in them. There are drawers and closets and boxes under your bed. Those old gadgets might be worth quite a bit of money at gazelle.com. If you're thinking about getting a new iPhone or an HTC One, you got the old HTC One, maybe you want a newer iPad or a Moto X, well, go to Gazelle. They'll buy your old Android or Apple devices. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPods. You can lock in your price today for 30 days. Send it to Gazelle when you get the new device. Gives you some time. You don't have to. You're not committed. You don't have to take advantage of it. But it's good to lock in that price, because I can tell you one thing I know for sure about all those gadgets, those old gadgets you have. They're not gaining in value. They're losing value day in, day out. So go right now to gazelle.com. Get that quote. Lock it in for 30 days. When you decide to sell, you just push a button. Gazelle sends you a box. The right size box, prepaid postage, so you don't have to pay the postage. They'll turn it around quickly. If you forget to wipe the data, they'll do it for you. Don't worry, your privacy's guaranteed. And you're going to get cash or check or PayPal credit. Or if you're an Amazon user, you might want to get the Amazon gift card, because that is worth an additional 5%. Free shipping, fast processing, and most items qualify for a free box. You got to go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Join the more than 700,000 customers who have been paid now more than $100 million for their old stuff. Stuff that just wasn't getting any valuable, more valuable in their drawers. Gazelle.com. Now we take you back to Scott Wilkinson and the Tech Guy Show, already in progress.
Well, hey, 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 how you doing today? It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who's taking a well-deserved vacation on the island of Maui, sitting on some beach somewhere, I'm sure. I hope he took my advice. My wife and I took our honeymoon on Maui. And, you know, most people, when they go to Maui, they go up the big mountain, Haleakala, to watch the sunrise. Well, I'm not an early morning kind of guy. You got to get up at stupid o'clock to do that. So I suggested, what we did was we went up the mountain in the afternoon and into the evening for a stargazing, an astronomy tour. And that was really cool because you're up at like, what, 12,000 feet or something. And even in the summer when we were there, you get up that high, you got to put on the parkas and they bring out hot cocoa. And it's like, yeah, thanks. And they brought out a bunch of telescopes and huge binoculars, right, on tripods. And they pointed them at different stuff and showed us. And it was great. So I suggested that to Leo, and I look forward to hearing if he did that, what he thought, because I thought it was great. Hey, I'm here with David Vaughn, my friend and fellow home theater geek. Hey, David.
Hey, Scott.
So glad to have you with me. I want to make sure everybody understands, and I want to mention my day gig, which is I'm the editor of avsforum.com, the world's largest, and literally so, the world's largest community of audio-video enthusiasts, over 1 million members. And if you have any question about audio-video anything, you can post it there. If you're a member, it's free to join. Doesn't cost anything. So and it's pretty easy. And when you do, you can post threads. You can post questions into all these different forums that are organized by category. So if you have a receiver question, you can post a receiver question. If you have a LCD TV question, you can post one there. And then you will get a ton of responses from the members. Every once in a while, some things I post spark these debates between two or three people that just run on for pages and pages and pages.
And nobody ever gives up.
And nobody ever gives up. Now, most of the time that happens with controversial topics. I've posted several things now on high-resolution audio, one of these very new and interesting topics that has been brought to the fore of the public consciousness by Neil Young with the Pono Project. And some people think it's worthwhile and some people don't, and they just argue back and forth, and that's fun too. But if you want to ask a question about, you know, which receiver should I buy, or I'm having trouble with this or that, you can post it on AVS, and you will get a lot of response, typically. Unfortunately, sometimes it'll be contradictory responses. But, you know, it's a great place to do a bunch of research. For example, we were talking last hour about Onkyo receivers and how for a long time, David, you and I just were able to recommend them without qualification. But over the last few years, you're starting to see more and more complaints on AVS and elsewhere that say, oh, my HDMI board went bad and I had to replace it, or they, you know, it was broken and whatever. So, you know, it's a great place to research if you're shopping for something or if you have a question, any kind of question at all. Now, the other thing that I do during the week is right here on the Twit Network, Leo's podcast network. He produces, I don't know, 30 or 40 shows each week on all about different types of technology. Mine is called, naturally enough, the Home Theater Geeks. Home Theater Geeks. And each week I have on a guest that talks about whatever it is that they are expert in. And I've been doing it now, believe it or not, 4.5 years.
Wow.
I'm coming up on episode 214, I think. So, and it's been great fun. And one of the founding principles of that podcast is I've been working in this industry for over 20 years. And in that time, I've developed a ton of relationships with a lot of heavyweight people in the industry. And so I thought, you know, wouldn't it be fun if I could get these people who maybe audio video enthusiasts have heard of, you know, to be on the show and talk about stuff. And so that's what I've done. And I've gotten a lot of very interesting people. Joe Kane's been on several times. He's the video guru in the industry. Andrew Jones, the designer of Pioneer's incredible speakers that are so inexpensive and yet so fabulous sounding. This guy designs $80,000 a pair speakers, but when he puts his mind to, you know, $100 a pair speakers, something special happens.
Yeah, I actually use those in a secondary system in my house.
There you go.
And they sound great.
They're great for the money. They hit way above their price.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously. So he's going to be on next Thursday, this coming Thursday, to talk about the new Dolby Atmos speakers. Now, this is something that I wanted to talk about at the opening of this hour of the show, because it's really one of the biggest pieces of news I think that we've had in a long time.
I think it's, I mean, biggest since 5.1.
Yeah, biggest news since 5.1. I think that's a great way to put it. Exactly right. For those of you who don't know, Dolby Atmos is a sound system that developed by Dolby, of course, that has been in the commercial cinema for several years. And what it does is, in addition to the surround speakers, the speakers that surround the theater along the walls, it also puts speakers on the ceiling. And it actually creates an honest-to-goodness hemispherical sound field, which really improves the sense of immersion in the movie tremendously when there are airplanes flying over, rain falling. There's all kinds of moments in a movie when if you had sound that was localized over your head and being able to move around, it would increase your sense of immersion and enjoyment in the movie. And that's exactly what Dolby Atmos does. It's what's called an object-oriented audio system. And what that means is they basically mix the audio in a 5.1 or a 7.1 normal surround sound field just on the sides and behind you. But then they have some number of what are called objects. Might be an airplane, might be a helicopter, might be something that's flying around. And they actually use a joystick. The mixer in the theater and in the sound mixing booth uses a joystick to move that object around. So it doesn't matter to Dolby, to the Dolby system, where, you know, what channel does it go to? The mixer doesn't have to think about it. The mixer only has to think about, where do I want this sound in the 3D sound space? And it works tremendously well. Whenever, if you can go see a movie in Dolby Atmos, go to Dolby.com and look up where there are movie theaters that have it. I strongly recommend it. Well, last week, it was announced that Dolby Atmos is coming to the home. And this is tremendous news. I just think this is great news. Now, of course, if you've just listened to what I said, you might think to yourself, putting speakers on the ceiling? Are you kidding me? My wife would never allow that.
No, you put them in the ceiling.
Well, you could do that. Well, yeah, that's a kind of a big pain in the you know what. But you could certainly put them in the ceiling or on the ceiling. But that has a very low wife acceptance factor, shall we say. Your wife, actually, I was a little surprised, thought it was okay.
Well she didn't. I wouldn't go that far.
she didn't shoot it down immediately.
She didn't throw me out. So,
yeah, okay. So
there's room for negotiation.
Okay, all right. But there's now another way to do it. Instead of mounting speakers on your ceiling, you can put little speaker drivers on top of your speakers that fire upward and reflect off the ceiling so that the sound is coming at you from above as it should, but you don't have to actually physically mount speakers on the ceiling. It's a brilliant idea.
I mean, similar idea to a soundbar.
In a sense.
You know, because soundbars bounce
sounds off the
walls.
Side in order to make a pseudo surround.
Right.
Some soundbars do that, not all of them.
Yeah.
But some of them do. Anyway, this is really great news. I'm sure we'll be talking about it more during the show. But for now, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, get down. Get funky. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I think we should go to the phones if Heather's got a call for me.
Sure do. We have Brett in Woodbridge, New Jersey.
Woodbridge, New Jersey. Let me make sure I got the right button pushed. Brett, hey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Hey, hey, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Man, you guys are very busy. I like you and I like Leo because you're a funny guy.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
You make me crack up. I can't help it.
I love it. I
like
love it.
Sitcom, you know?
Thank you.
I had a question because I have the Android tablet and I have the Chromecast, and I found an app yesterday which is not supported by, I guess, Chromecast. It's not a Chromecast app, and what I want to know is, because it plays a lot of movies and TVs in perfectly 1080 picture, but what I want to do is I want to cast it to my Chromecast, and you was talking about something before about the AllCast, which I did, but that's only if you have movies and pictures and music and stuff on your tablet. But I want to be able to...
You want to be able to do true mirroring of whatever's on your on your tablet or smartphone. You want to be able to send that to the TV.
And then with that app, when I open that app up and I find a movie I want to watch, I want to be able to play on there. So is there any apps that the other guy would know that you said has an Android that would be... free, or even if I had to pay a few dollars, I don't care.
Right, right. Well, you know what? It's what you're saying is true, and this AllCast thing is a bit of a kludge. And according to the news from Google I/O, their developers conference, more or less, true casting or mirroring from an Android device to the Chromecast will be implemented later this year. But for now, what you have to do is either use AllCast or use a different system called Miracast, M-I-R-A-C-A-S-T.
Yeah, I downloaded that one too, and didn't seem to work.
Well, you need I'm not sure that it'll work on a Chromecast. I don't think it will. You need a Miracast device.
How much is that?
To make it work. Well, let's see. I'm looking here now. Some TV manufacturers have integrated it into their TVs, but only in the last year.
I'm talking about a separate box.
Yeah, right, a separate box. Best Buy has one called Rocket Fish. Right. Most of these, and it's a dongle. It's kind of like Chromecast. It's a dongle. And it's in the, typically they're in the $40 to $60 range.
Okay, let me write this down here so I don't forget. But there is another way, now that I can't do this, there is another way is it has the Watch Now tab or the Download tab. So I started downloading some movies, and then I can always watch them through the Google Movies and TV app, which automatically goes to your thing. But the only thing is, with wireless and the 2.4 gigahertz band, it's not that fast, even though we have a great connection with our Comcast, because I'm getting 91 point something down on the Ethernet, but the only thing is I don't like doing things wirelessly, especially downloading, because at 2.4 it could take a while, you know.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I'm hoping that would change soon, you know, because if I'm getting 91 down, then my sister, who has the iPad, and me should be getting at least half of that, shouldn't we? You know, it doesn't make any sense either, you know.
Well, it depends on your home network also. If you're doing it wirelessly, video wirelessly, right, can be problematic.
Yeah, exactly right.
Because any noise, I mean, you start using your microwave, your video can break.
Especially
up
at 2.4 gigahertz.
Yep.
Which is another reason to think about using Miracast, because it doesn't rely on your home's Wi-Fi network.
No?
No, it creates its own separate Wi-Fi network that's independent of your home network.
You pay for that a month, right?
No, it's free.
No, it's free.
Oh,
but you need a Miracast device, right, such as this thing from Best Buy called Rocket Fish, CNET test.
Look on Amazon. You think they might have something?
Oh, undoubtedly. Netgear has a thing called Push 2 TV. That's Push 2.
Wait a second. Push
Push to TV by Netgear.
How much is that retail about?
I'm not seeing exactly, but I bet you it's in the, you know, roughly $50 range.
Probably. Does that do the same thing as Miracast does?
Yeah, exactly. It's a Miracast. It is a Miracast device. Miracast is not a product. It's a protocol. It's a streaming wireless protocol that certain devices can use. So Android devices can use it. And if you what you need, though, in addition to your Android device, like a smartphone or tablet, is a device at the other end that's connected to your TV with HDMI. That would be a dongle or something like that.
Oh, and that's what these things do.
That's exactly right.
These things don't replace the Android tablet. My apps are, I'm still going to be able to use my app on my tablet.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just giving me the other end or something, right?
Correct, correct. It's giving you the other end connected to your TV and letting you stream or mirror what is on your Android tablet onto your phone.
It's sharing the content.
It's sharing the content, exactly. But it's not using your home Wi-Fi, which is, I think, an advantage.
Okay, well, who is providing the Wi-Fi? Because don't they have to pay for...
No, because it's only local. It's very short range. It's between your Android device and this dongle thing or whatever it is you're using.
I'm saying, who's providing the wireless though? Isn't there a company that's providing the wireless?
No, no. Only the company that sells you the dongle.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Definitely looking.
See, basically, Miracast is a wireless HDMI cable. That's all it is.
Okay, so the Miracast would be your recommendation instead of the other one, right?
Instead of the Allcast. It looks to me like that one...
What's the TV I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That looks like the Miracast will be able... You'll be able to mirror anything on your tablet onto your TV.
And even the apps that don't support the Chromecast, right?
Right.
Great.
That's what it looks like to me. Now,
you made me happy.
I'm so glad. Thank you so much.
You also have to make sure that his Android tablet supports Miracast.
That's true. You do have to make sure of that. How old is your Android tablet?
Oh, I would say since June 23rd when it came out, because I got a new tablet, the Asus.
Oh, then you're fine. Yeah. If it's a new tablet, you're fine.
Yeah. iPad 7. But then I have an old, which is maybe 3 years old, a Samsung Galaxy Tab 2. But that one might not be Miracast compatible, right?
It might not be.
Now, how can I find that on that device if it is?
Well, that's a good question.
Probably Miracast website.
Yeah, there must be a Miracast website. Let me see if I can find that real quick.
Okay, sure.
And if I do, I'll let you know.
Okay, no problem.
All right, thanks so much for the call.
Okay, I'm going to keep listening. Thanks.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay, so Miracast, I don't see a website for Miracast specifically.
Google's your friend.
Google is your friend. Well, that's what I'm looking on right now. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And that music can mean only one thing. It's time to talk to our photo guru, Chris Marquardt, all the way from Germany, I guess, is where you are right now, eh, Chris?
That's where I'm right now. It's awesome to talk to you again. Haven't spoken with you in a long time.
Yeah, it's been over a year, and I so love talking with you because I myself am an avid amateur photographer. Haven't sold any pictures yet. I may someday. Who knows? But I do love taking pictures. I do love taking pictures, and my wife does too. It's a hobby we share. And so I see on your website, discoverthetopfloor.com, you host a bunch of tours to all kinds of different interesting places. I'm going to have to take one of those tours one of these times because they just look fabulous.
Happy to have you. To Iceland or to India in May next year.
Oh,
there's still a few seats open.
Both of those places are very fascinating to me, in particular the Iceland trip, because you're going there for the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights,
and that is
definitely on my bucket list. I want to see the Northern Lights before I die.
And it's amazing. It's amazing. It's this thing that is hard to see in video because you need long exposures, long shutter speeds. So most of the videos that you see of that are kind of sped up or just not the right thing. So seeing that with your own eyes is like, whoa.
Exactly so. And I would love to take pictures too, but I think you're right. I don't think photos or video really do it justice, do they?
Well, the photos, at least you can do a long exposure and then you get these greenish, sometimes even red or other colors, these lights that some of them move, some of them don't, but you get like very interesting shapes if you know how to do it, if you have the right equipment, if you know how to do it. And that's right. What we do on this tour.
For example. On this tour, we would learn from you how to do it.
Exactly. That's what I'm there for.
Well, I always love listening to your segment too, because I always learn something. I know Leo does too. And I know that you've got some big news for us today, don't you?
Well, it's big news in one way. It's also bad news in another way. And it's about Apple's Aperture software. So mm-hmm. I don't know what do you video guys use to sort your videos to play them. I'm guessing iTunes or XBMC or Plex maybe.
Sure. There's also Adobe Premiere, I think.
Not the editing.
I mean the sorting.
Like all the movies and things that you have back.
I don't shoot video myself. I'm strictly a still photographer, actually.
But if you have this kind of a collection, you would probably use something that has metadata in there, so you could search by director or by actor or by year or by genre or something.
Yep, that's true.
And the same is true in the world of pictures. Photographers nowadays like to use metadata, so they like to be able to search for pictures by keywords or by location or by sorting criteria like star ratings and things like that. And Aperture is one of those programs next to Lightroom, for example, which is also quite well known. There are smaller versions of those. One's called iPhoto. Pretty much everyone knows that. Everyone who has an Apple computer knows that. Mm-hmm. Picasa is another one that does similar things, but Aperture is kind of one of the more professional varieties of this kind of a software to manage your pictures and to modify your pictures to edit them. Mm-hmm. And Apple has just announced to stop development of Aperture.
What?
That's kind of a huge thing in the photo community. People are ticked off a bit about this because Lightroom used to be the professional solution that kind of kept Aperture used to be the professional solution that kept Lightroom in check. So big competition there between the two. Mm-hmm. But Aperture hasn't really been getting any updates over the last couple of years, just smaller things. I think the last bigger update is at least 2 years ago. So the question was, are we going to get like a huge, big update, one that is going to make Lightroom fade into oblivion? But that has not happened. And instead, what Apple did, they announced on the WWDC that they are working on a new software called Photos, which is going to be on Macs in the future. There's already a Photos app on your iPhone. That's the one that you look at, that you use to look at the photos you take. So it's pretty much always there. Mm-hmm. And with the future of things to come in the Apple universe, we're talking about, I'm not sure if you followed that, but there's the handoff and the continuity thing where you work on something on your mobile device and then when you're back home, you continue working on the same thing by just pressing a button. Like you can switch between devices and between your Mac and between your iPad and your iPhone by just pressing a button. And in order to kind of facilitate that, in order to make it a bit more simple, Apple has now announced that they are going to fully concentrate on the new Photos app and kind of kill off Aperture.
Wow. What does that mean for professionals? I mean, as you said, professionals are the ones who are using Aperture quite a bit. Are they going to be happy switching to Photo?
Well, here are a few tips. First of all, Aperture is not going away from your computer. Apple saying that they discontinued that doesn't mean it will just disappear, so you can keep working with it. They actually have announced a compatibility update for the Yosemite macOS version that's coming in fall, I think. Mm-hmm. So it will work for quite a while, and they have also announced that they will provide a migration path, so you can actually upgrade your Aperture library to the new Photos library. And from the screenshots I've seen so far, I'm actually not too concerned. It looks like a lot of the functionality that even professionals expect should be there. But again, we've only seen one screenshot, so I'm hoping that that'll come out. It's supposed to be coming out early next year. So,
well, certainly the move toward mobile devices, you know, seems to be very pronounced, and everybody is, you know, trying to integrate into mobile devices. Yes. You know, I just last night we were out to dinner, and before we went into dinner, we found this little thrift store next to the restaurant here in Petaluma called the Thrifty Hippie.
Awesome.
And there was he had this funky old turntable, vinyl record turntable. My wife took a picture of me kind of cradling it because it was like, ah. And then she immediately, you know, went into photo on the iPhone and, you know, started cropping it and getting it ready to tweet. Perfect. So
and we're going to do more and more of that. Even professional photographers, there will be ways in the future where you can plug in your camera into your iPad and download the pictures and work on RAW files. It's not there yet, but some point in the future, it's got to happen. The processors are gonna be faster, and you'll be able to do these kind of things. So I think the future is really one where mobile devices and your big computer at home are kind of on the same level with the abilities they can do.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where what we're going towards.
I saw... when I was at CES, my colleague Mark Henninger had a lens thing from Sony that he was able to attach to his iPhone, and it gave it a lot better optics. Is that something you recommend? Mm-hmm. Have you tried that?
Well, there are certain little attachments. One is called the Olo Clip. There are other ones. If you need more angle, if you need a wider angle or a more telephoto, it's definitely better to do this in an optical way than with like zooming in digitally.
No question about it. I agree with that completely.
To recalculate the video, to interpolate,
scale it basically, yeah,
the stuff and scale it, and that's not good. So if that's what you need, and the Olo Clip is one that I have and use, which gives you like a super wide angle, even a fisheye, so you get like lots of coverage with your camera.
Mm-hmm.
And in some situations, that's a fun thing to do. So some of those are cool, some of those are bulky. So I actually don't think I would take him with me.
Well, that certainly is a question about, you know, taking along your SLR with your lenses is a, you know, that's a lot of stuff to carry. And maybe, as you have said, you know, we're headed towards the mobile situation with where you can really shoot professionally with your iPhone. Chris, thanks so much. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Chris. Sorry, we ran out of time there.
Oh, that was perfect. Absolutely.
Yeah, worked great. Gordon Lightfoot, love it. Man, that takes me back to my college days. Sometimes you've been creeping around my back stairs.
Hey, karaoke with Scott.
It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek. And sometimes karaoke, you know, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was on a trip to Japan a few years ago with Sharp, I think, and we had a little cruise in Tokyo Bay, and there was karaoke.
Oh boy,
it was really fun.
Karaoke and beer, right?
Yeah, no, sake.
Sake, okay.
Yeah. It was loads of fun. Anyway, I'm here with David Vaughn, my friend and fellow home theater geek, and we're talking what else? Home theater, audio, video, anything we can think of along those lines. And there's plenty to think of and talk about. Let's get to another call, shall we? Heather, who we
Your
got?
Your favorite thing. Someone helping someone spend their money. Carla in Irvine is sitting in the car, ready to turn over the ignition and head to Best Buy, I think.
Oh, my God. Wow. Well, let me make sure I got the button pushed. Carla, you're in your car, ready to spend money. Your wallet is out. You're ready to go, eh?
Ready to go. Yes, I am.
Fantastic. How can I help you?
Okay. I'm looking to replace the 55-inch. I have a Samsung DLP that has a nice snowy effect that are stuck on, which is great when you're watching Star Wars, but
oh yeah,
done with that. Now it's just randomly shutting off. So
it's time.
It's time
today because soccer resumes tomorrow.
Ooh, can't miss that.
No.
Goal!
So And I have no opinion on this whatsoever, other than I have a 55-inch. I want anything bigger than that, so I want to stick with that.
Okay, I'll take you at your word, but I will challenge you a little bit first by saying, how far do you sit from your TV?
Well, we're kind of in a U-shape, so it depends on where you're sitting.
Are you often sitting off to the side, not directly in front of the TV?
Some of the seats, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's common for people to sit way over onto the side?
When it's a full house, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. How about the brightness in the room?
There is a lot of light in that room in the afternoon that I can't quite get it dark, which is why we've thought to stay away from plasma.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get it completely dark during the day.
But you can darken it down a little bit, yeah. Right? Do you have shades of some sort?
I can definitely darken it down, yeah.
Okay. Well, and what's your budget? Let me ask you that.
Say around $1,000.
$1,000, okay.
Yeah.
You can certainly get a plasma for $1,000. The Samsung F5300, I think, was one that Mark Henninger recently got. And
$799.99.
$800 at Best Buy?
Yeah, it's 60-inch.
$300?
It's called the F5300, is that?
Yes, you got the F5300.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the 53, not the 6300.
No. 5300. Right, exactly. Thank you, David, for looking that up. You know, that is a very nice plasma. Sometimes he did notice a problem with it, and that is when you have a perfectly white screen, which those of us who are geeks sometimes put up on the screen, what's called a very white, just a white field. Mm-hmm. It'll have a slight pinkish tinge along the bottom edge of the screen. He found that with two samples. Hmm. Now it wasn't noticeable on any real content. The only real content that it might possibly be visible on is something where there's tons of snow, like this movie Art of Flight, which is about snowboarding and skiing. And it's possible you might see a tinge of it there, but in soccer or just about anything else, it wouldn't be a problem. And certainly plasma is going to give you that off-axis. It's going to look the same off-axis as on, whereas no LCD, no matter how much you spend, is going to have that capability. You go off-axis, the blacks are going to rise, the colors are going to shift, the contrast is going to look, it's going to look washed out for people sitting over on the side. Now, it's true, LCDs do pump out a lot more light than plasmas, and so, if you are in a very bright environment, then that's a problem. Also, the screens are very shiny, so sometimes you can see your reflection in the screen if you're brightly lit. But many LCDs have that now, too, so especially Samsung's. So,
what would you recommend for the LCD? And what's the difference between, I noticed some say just they're an LED technology and some LED LCD.
Yeah. This is a marketing confusion that the manufacturers have promulgated upon the public, and badly. I'm really unhappy that they did. They are often called LED TVs, which is a misnomer. It's not true. They are LCD TVs. They use an LCD panel to create the picture, and they use LEDs, light-emitting diodes, as the illumination source. Old-school LCD TVs used fluorescent tubes, smaller ones, but much like the fluorescent tubes in an office, right? They're just fluorescent tubes, but they're tiny. They're small. They're very thin. Those fluorescent tubes have been replaced by LEDs, which are more energy efficient. They don't have mercury in them. There's a lot of good reasons to use LEDs.
Yeah.
But the manufacturers have said, oh, look, we now have an LED TV. To me, the only true LED TV is the Jumbotron at the sports arena, because that is actually red, green, and blue LEDs creating the picture. But it's, 100 feet wide, and it's, half a mile away. So it can do that. The other thing that does that is the Fremont Street Experience in Las Vegas. I don't know if you've ever been to Vegas. But that's a half-mile-long TV overhead, and that that uses real LEDs. But LCD TVs, the kind that you go to shop for in the store, are LCD TVs. I refer to them as LED-LCD TVs just to indicate the type of illumination.
Got it.
So your question is what
would you recommend in that technology?
Yeah. In the $1,000 range, I would probably look at Vizio. The 2014 models in particular, the current models. The M series is now out. The 60-inch lists for $1,500, I think, or it might be the 65 even.
I'm looking right now, trying to find it on their website.
Okay, so. Yeah. They do list their prices on their website, which is a nice thing.
Okay.
So they use this technology called full array local dimming, or FALD, FALD.
Okay.
And that is far better, in my opinion, generally speaking, than LED edge lighting, which most TVs these days, LCD TVs, use. All of Samsung's do. Most of Sony's do. It allows the TV to be thinner, which seems to be a strong selling point, and cheaper, less expensive. So, but it causes problems. It causes what's called flash lighting, which is if you're watching a space scene, say, you know, Star Wars or something, or you're watching a letterbox movie with black bars on the top and bottom, those black bars or that black of space is not uniform. It's
okay.
Got areas of slightly lighter and slightly darker. So that is a problem with edge lighting. So that's why I prefer backlighting. And the Vizio M series in particular, I just got one in for review. I haven't even set it up yet. But what I've seen of it has been very impressive.
Yeah, and they have two of them here. The M55-2. I-B2 is $899, or the M55-1D-A2R is $999, and I have no idea what the difference is between
I can tell
the
you. The A, if the model number has an A at the end, it's a 2013 model.
Okay.
And don't get it, because it's going to be edge lit. You want to get one with a B at the end of the model. I mean, some of these model numbers, I have to write a piece about this sometime, because it's just so confusing.
That's the M55-2
2I-B2.
Okay.
And that's $899.
Yep.
Okay.
That's certainly going to be a lot brighter.
Yeah.
And it's a 55-inch, as you want.
Right. Yep.
I would go, you know, at a distance of 8 or 9 feet, I'd go a little bigger if I were you, but depends on your budget. But I'd also look at that Samsung plasma, that F5300.
Do you have an opinion on the Samsung F6300?
That's
plasma.
That is not a plasma.
That's an LED.
An LED, and it's edge lit. So I wouldn't recommend it as much. I mean, Samsung makes a great product, and their top of the line product is great. But anyway, thanks. Good luck with your purchase. I'm jealous. I love spending money. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey there. How you doing today? Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, taking a well-deserved vacation this 4th of July weekend. And I'm here with David Vaughn, my friend and co-home theater geek. David, did you do anything fun for 4th of July?
We hung out around the house and then went and watched fireworks.
Ah, very good.
Nice and low-key.
Low-key. To have a barbecue, anything like that?
Barbecued some chicken.
Sounds good.
Didn't go to a baseball game like
that. Yeah, we went to the baseball game on the 4th of July. Oakland A's and Toronto Blue Jays. They were at zip-zip by the end of the 10th inning, and we said, you know what? We're done. We left. And the A's finally pulled it out with one run at the bottom of the 12th.
Yeah, on a misplayed ball to left field.
Yeah. It was an error on the part of the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
So, you know, okay. anyway, we're not here to talk baseball. We're here to talk about home theater and audio, video, all kinds of cool stuff like that. We only got 1 hour left, so let's get right to the phone, shall we?
We've got James in, I'm going to say this right, Hyndman, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my God.
Looking for a recommendation.
Okay. Let me just push up the right button here and the right button there. James, hey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Hi, Scott. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's interesting that you would mention Onkyo earlier, because that's exactly the issue that I had.
Hey, there you go.
So I'm actually looking for a replacement. The receiver that I had was a TX-NR-808. It was probably, I don't know, maybe 3 years old, something like that.
At least, yeah. Something like that.
And my speakers are, they're Polk Audio. It's a 6.1 system.
Nice.
Those are from probably around, I'm going to say 2002, 2003, but, you know, they still sound fine to me, so.
Sure. Speakers last a long time. There's generally no reason to replace them unless, you know, you just have the upgrade-itis bug.
Unless you have Dolby Atmos coming out.
Well, there is that, yes.
One other thing with that system or with that receiver was typically, I mean, I had to really turn it up to get sufficient volume. So what I was with getting a replacement, and that's obviously my first question, is what you would recommend as a replacement. The second thing I was thinking about was, can I add like a secondary amp to that AVR to boost, you know, I guess it'd be the power for the front main speakers, or if there's some other way of doing that, or do I have to get whatever amplifier I get with the AVR, do I need to buy that initially as part of the whole AVR, or can I add a secondary amp?
Well, you typically can add a secondary amp, though it's not as it sounds like you're implying, that, you know, you could just sort of add an amp onto the receiver's existing amp and get more power that way. You can't do that. Most receivers have what are called pre-outs that take the preamp output from the receiver and send it to an external amp that you use instead of the receiver's internal amplifiers. Let me ask you this. Do you happen to know what the impedance of those speakers is?
I don't off the top of my head. I actually do have the model numbers here, but that probably doesn't
help. Well, that might help. Give us a model number.
The front and rear center are CS400Is.
Okay. What about the front, right, and left?
Those are RT800I.
800I. Okay. David's going to look those up. And while he does, I'm going to say that I suppose it's possible that those speakers have relatively low impedance, which means they need more power. Okay. And in that case, perhaps the Onkyo is underpowered. And that's another question Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking. What is the power output of your receiver? You said it was the 808, I think.
Yeah. I think that's 120 watts, I believe, per channel.
Right, which should be perfectly sufficient. And UJ in the chat room says, I'm quite sure Polks are 8 ohms, so that's not your problem. That refers to the impedance of the speakers.
Yeah, and these are 89, efficiency's 89 dB.
89 dB, so that's pretty good. There's nothing wrong with that, and 8 ohm should be working fine.
Did you run Odyssey on the 808?
I did not. No, I did not initially.
Okay, because that might have had something to do with it as well.
Yeah. I mean, these aren't real hard speakers to drive.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
And that should have plenty of power, and it should play, I mean, louder than you should possibly listen to it.
Than you'd be comfortable with by any means.
Yeah.
I mean, as Scott was saying, if you're looking at a receiver, or, you know, you could go to separates. You could get, you know, an Emotiva or an Outlaw Pre-Pro, mm-hmm. and then get an amplifier. An outboard amplifier is going to be stronger than pretty much any amplifier in an AVR, because most of them are only rated at driving one or two channels at a time.
That's
so
right.
So you're 120 if you're driving five channels is probably
more like 70
75,
or 80.
Yeah. Right in that range.
Yeah, exactly.
So where if you get a 100 watt per channel Outlaw or Emotiva, it's going to drive 100 watts times five or seven channels.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So that certainly is one excellent way to go. The other is to upgrade your amplifier, although I'm now less convinced that's the right answer, because you should be doing all right.
Well, the amplifier is dead, so...
Oh, well, you need to replace it anyway, then.
I need to replace it anyway, exactly.
All right. Well, certainly Marantz, Denon, Pioneer, I think, are all makers of fine AVRs. But I'm, you know, depending on your budget, do you have any concept of a budget?
For the AVR, I'd probably like to stay around $1,000, $1,100, something like that, if possible.
David, do you know what the Emotiva?
Well, the Emotiva Pre-Pro is under $500, and you can get a 5 or probably 7 channel amp for around $500
from Emotiva.
From Emotiva.
Yeah, exactly. That might be a an excellent way to go, and then you can really impress your friends by, ooh, I've got separates.
And they have a good return policy as well.
And they have a good return. Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
So the Pre-Pro, that would be the receiver itself?
Well, in essence, yes. I mean, what we're talking about is separating the preamp and processing capabilities from the amplification capabilities. In a receiver, in an AV receiver, those things are combined into one box.
Okay.
But we're talking about separating them out into a separate Pre-Pro and a separate power amp. And those two boxes do the same thing as one box of an AVR, an AV receiver, but it offers some advantage. For example, it isolates the electronics of those two functions, right? The preamp processor and the power amp. When they're combined in one box, you might get some electromagnetic interference or some other little weirdnesses going on that if a good AV receiver, you know, won't have because it's well designed, but lesser ones might have some problems. So you separate them out. Another thing you can do then is upgrade the Pre-Pro when new capabilities come available without having to spend money yet again on more amplifiers. You can keep the amp for a long time. And Emotiva is a very excellent budget-conscious brand, shall we say.
Well, it's Internet Direct, yep. So you're not paying the middleman. I'm looking on their website right now. They have a 7-channel amp for $499.
Yep.
80 watts per channel, and it's going to deliver 80 or more, actually.
That's a true 80 watts, yeah.
It's the UPA 700, and then you can get their budget Pre-Pro, which is the UMC 200,
I think.
I believe is the name of it.
Yeah.
UMC 200, that's $599 now, so it's a little bit more. It's gone up since I reviewed it 2 years ago.
Right.
So, but it works real well. It has room correction. Won't offer they have a dongle that can do streaming, like a Bluetooth streaming, but it's more bare bones, but it sounds excellent.
Yeah, yeah. And you can always get a Roku or something if you want to do the streaming.
Yeah.
Hey, good luck to you. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back after this. Yeah, yeah, Saturday night's all right for fighting, except it's Sunday afternoon. Well, we'll fight a little bit anyway. No, 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 we won't fight after all. We will talk home theater. We will have all kinds of fun today. Yes, indeed. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I'm here with my friend and fellow home theater geek, David Vaughn. David, thanks so much for being here.
Wouldn't miss it for the world. Fourth time.
Fourth time with you and me together. It's great fun. And may there be many more.
Yes.
So let's get right back to the phones. Heather, who we got?
Well, Sunday's okay for wrestling with some wires.
Oh, yeah. Wrestling with wires. I love wrestling with wires.
Good. You need to help Chris in Lake Elsinore. He's going to be upgrading a system.
Okay. Chris, hey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Doing great.
Thanks for calling in for Leo.
My pleasure.
Hey, I've got a question for you. I'm taking basically a theater in the box, 250-watt system that was, it's probably 7 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting ready to upgrade our entire system in the house temporarily. We're moving in 2 years, so I just want to do something to keep us entertained. But the system I'm looking at is going up to 500 watts. And right now I have the whole house. When I remodeled it, I replumbed the whole thing with 14-gauge wire from the output of the receiver to all the 5.1 speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Going from 250 to 500 watts, is that 14-gauge wire going to be strong enough, or am I going to be hurting the amplifier by choking down the size of the pipe?
Well, yeah, as I recall, the number of the gauge, as it goes up, the wire diameter goes down?
Correct.
Right. I have generally recommended 12-gauge.
Yeah, but 14 is pretty thick. Standard, 16.
Standard is 16?
Standard is 16.
Okay.
So 14's fine.
Okay. All right. even with that higher amperage. Or
I'm assuming the 500 watts, is it a home theater in the box?
Yeah, it's home theater in a box.
That's 100 watts per channel.
Like 20, I think I'm getting like 25, 27 RMS per speaker.
Then you have no problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're good there because I put 30 inches of insulation on top of all the wires, and I'm like, do I have to go up there and rake all the insulation out of the way to rerun the wires?
No,
okay.
No, I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say so. I myself would have chosen 12 gauge, but that's only because I'm, you know, kind of erring on the side of absurdity. But
understood.
I think the 14 gauge should be just fine. Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking, make sure it's not a Class D amplifier because Class D would have erroneous wattage ratings. We could talk about that. But what is the home theater in a box? Who's it from?
It's going to be from RCA. I'm just doing a super basic system. I've got an old rear projection Sony, before Vizio, 56-inch, and we're going to go to a 60-inch Samsung.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
With just a Samsung or an RCA 500-watt theater in a box. I just want to replace the speakers and just get us to be entertained again.
It's a temporary solution until you move.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the theater in the boxes, the speakers generally, if you can get 5 years out of them, you're doing real well.
Yeah, because exactly.
A lot of them use paper cones, mm-hmm. and they attract dust, and they just get brittle and
deteriorate over
shrill.
Time. Yeah. So as a temporary solution, I think it's reasonable.
Perfect. Hey, one other quick question.
Yeah.
When it comes to the TV, my son races motocross, and we do a lot of GoPro footage that we put through the DVD player or through the input.
Yeah.
We use it as training as he's watching, and he can see he goes into a corner and how he hits the corner and comes back.
Wow, you're a real pro there. That's great.
Yeah, we're amateurs, but we like to act like we're pros.
Okay.
When it comes to the TV, standard HD, okay?
I'm sorry, say again?
A standard HD TV. I mean, do I need to spend an extra couple $1,000? We just want to be able to see where the corner is and where he's coming into.
Oh, yeah. No. Regular HD TV is totally fine.
Okay.
You don't need to buy a 4K TV for that.
Okay, perfect.
I mean, I generally don't recommend buying 4K TVs yet anyway.
No, neither do I.
Generally speaking. So, and especially for that, no, I wouldn't worry about it at all. Regular HD will be fabulous.
Perfect. So we're good with 14 gauge.
Yep, I'd say so.
Yep.
You just saved me about 9 hours worth of work.
Yes.
Right on, man.
Bye-bye.
Cool,
bye.
Man. Thanks. All right, Heather, who we got next?
JR in Detroit's ready to talk to you.
All right, JR. Let me just make sure I get the buttons pushed right. JR, how you doing, man?
Real good, Scott. Big fan of yours.
Hey, thanks so much.
Your co-host today, Dave. I've been reading him for years.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Serial file and a bunch of different magazines. Look, I got a quick question for you.
Sure.
I think I'm on a real strict budget right now, and I'm putting together a little computer-related game mixing studio. And basically, I'm going to be doing the audio. And I was looking at the JBL LSR 305s or the 308s, and I was wondering if either one of you guys have had any experience with those. And the reason I'm calling you is because I heard you earlier mention that, you know, everything is coming from China. And I'm a big fan of JBL, but these speakers are made in China, so I'm a little leery.
Well, just because it's made in China doesn't mean it's no good. I mean, certainly, products coming from anywhere can be made well or poorly, and China is included in that. Tell me the model number of the speakers you're thinking about again.
LSR 305 or the 308.
Okay.
Basically, it's a 5-inch woofer or 8-inch woofer. They're self-powered.
Okay. Well, I would definitely get the 8-inch woofer if you could, because that's certainly going to go lower. You're talking about studio monitors, really, here is what you're talking about, because you're going to be mixing game audio, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you're probably not going to plan on doing a subwoofer?
No, I live in an apartment building.
You don't want to bug your neighbors, huh?
Yeah, it's not a great idea. I can tell what the low frequencies are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to also need some kind of a digital to analog converter, you know, to insert in between these. If you look at them, if you found them on Google, they have either XLR or an unbalanced connection input on the back.
Yeah, they've got XLR and TRS balanced. They got quarter inch balanced on the back as well.
Yeah, quarter inch, yeah.
And what are you coming out of? You're coming out of your digital audio workstation, a computer?
Yeah, it's an Intel-based motherboard, and it has it's a real popular codec. I'm trying to think of it's a chip in there. It's not the best in the world, but it's real tech.
Uh-huh. Well, then, yeah, you could use the computer's own DAC, digital-to-analog converter, or you could buy an external one. DACs are, man, that is a whole area of study all by itself. If I look for a computer DAC, I'd have to do a little research on that. USB DAC review here. Mac, are you on a Mac? You're on a PC, Intel-based?
PC, yeah.
Yeah. There's just a million of them, and you know, you could spend thousands of dollars or not. Let's see what the chat room has to say here. If anybody has a Mac, let's see. Lawn Dog says, "Aren't those speakers designed more for a band or live band audio?" No, I don't think so.
No, no,
they're studio monitors. Yeah, those are a good choice. Let me look up, see if I can find something about DACs, and keep on listening. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I am totally digging the music that Nathan is coming up with today. We're rocking out here, man. Yeah. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who just tweeted out that he's having so much fun, he's going to be gone for a few more days. And who can blame him, really? He'll be back next weekend, I guess. Oh, well. You know, if he decides to stay longer, I'm available. I'll come back. No question about it, because I have so much fun doing this. And we're coming down. We got the last half hour of the last hour of the show, and I'm just so thrilled to be here with my friend and fellow home theater geek, David Vaughn. You're doing the yeoman service here. You're looking up stuff while we're talking and
doing my best.
Oh, you're doing great. Fantastic, in fact. We were just talking last segment about DACs, digital to audio, digital to analog converters. And we looked up a few that might be interesting. Audio Engine is certainly one. I'm trying to look at the price here. Let's see. Doesn't really say quite, but probably in the few hundred dollar range. What did we find earlier? Cambridge Audio.
Audio.
DAC Magic. That came from the chat room. So there are a ton of digital to audio converters that our friend who is mixing audio for games can take out of his USB output from the computer into the DAC, and then out of the DAC to the two speakers. Which I guess are powered speakers, as I recall.
Yeah, they were powered speakers.
Yeah, from JBL. And I definitely recommend the 8-inch woofers rather than the 5-inch woofers to get a better bass, particularly if he's not using a subwoofer.
His neighbors may disagree.
Yeah, well, you know, you just got to be careful there. Okay, let's keep going. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger.
We're getting a call from Rhode Island. It's Mark trying to do something nice for the family.
Oh, I love doing something nice for the family. You know, that's a really great thing to do. Hey, Mark, welcome. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Hey, Scott. I hope you had a happy 4th.
I did. Very happy. And you?
Very good. Very good.
Excellent.
So my mom, she won a TV.
She won a TV?
Yeah, she does Avon, and they had a contest for the Avon rep.
Sure, sure. Well, congratulations to her.
So she asked me to hook it all up.
As moms are wont to do.
One of the things that she has is a wireless headset.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad has trouble hearing. So what she wants to do is to have the sound still come from the speakers, but also be wireless transmitted to the headset.
Right.
So enjoy the show, too.
Sure.
But when I plug the jack into the audio part of the TV,
mm-hmm.
shut off the speakers on the TV.
This is very common. Now, what is the make and model of the TV, do you know?
It's an RCA 46 LED.
Okay.
TV.
Well, there may be in the menu system of the TV, there's an audio, there probably, a menu system of all TVs has a video submenu and an audio submenu and a couple other things. And the audio submenu may very well have a setting that says if something's plugged into the audio output of the TV, turn off the TV's own internal speakers. Or it may be you may be able to set it to do both.
Yeah, I'm not actually plugging it into the digital audio out. I'm actually plugging it into the it's like a headphone jack on the TV.
The RCA TV actually has a headphone jack?
Yes.
Wow. I thought those disappeared years ago.
It shuts off the speakers. And I did check the menus, and it does have a digital audio out.
Yeah.
And I'm a little confused with that, too, because it says off, and then I turn it on, and I try to plug it in there, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, he's using the headphone. They have a headphone jack on the TV. I'm looking at it right here.
That's amazing. I thought those disappeared.
Yeah.
They did tell me that the only solution that they could come up with, this was at the store that I go to a lot, they said that you might need to get a digital audio converter for the digital to audio and plug it into there.
Well, yeah, we were just talking about digital to audio converters, digital to analog converters. Let me ask you, the wireless headphones, does there should be a base station and then the headphones that rest in the base station, probably charge it, and then you pick up the headphones and you move away and you put them on. But there's still a base station that you have to hook some audio source to, right?
Yeah, it has two, a red and a white.
A red and a white input. Okay, so those are analog stereo audio inputs. It does not have a digital input?
No, it doesn't.
I'm confused. So you're hooking the red and white cables up to the back of the TV, and that's turning off the speakers?
I have it hooked up. I have one of those splitters.
It's a splitter. It's got a headphone plug on one end, and it splits out to two RCAs on the other end. And I'll bet you that when you plug something into that headphone jack, it does turn off the internal speakers.
Yeah, but what he should be doing is instead of using a splitter, go to the back of the TV and hook up the analog red and white. There should be an audio output on the back of the TV. Don't use the headphone jack.
Yes, precisely what I was going to say. You beat me to it. Very good. Very good.
The thing is that the components that she has a Roku, a VCR, and a DVD player, and it takes up all the jacks on the TV.
It takes up all the input jacks. Yes. What we're talking about is the output jack. On the back of that TV, I would be willing to wager that there is a red and a white RCA audio output.
Yeah, there's only when I'm looking at the TV, it has the HDMIs.
Yeah.
And one red, white, and it's like three of them.
Are you seeing back panel?
Well, I'm looking at an RCA TV. I just don't know his model number.
Do you remember the exact model number?
Yeah, I can get that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because then we can probably look up the back panel and see.
LED46C45RQ.
Okay, that's the one I'm looking at on BestBuy.com. It says there are analog outputs. Now, the analog output should be on the back of the TV.
Yep.
You're just going to have to look at those really carefully to see if one of them is an output that you may think is an input. But the specs are showing it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the back of the TV right now, and I have actually the VCR plugging into the TV, and that's going into the bottom three, and then there's two that are exposed that they're calling a BP auxiliary, and it's a blue and a red.
Oh, sorry, a green and a blue and a red?
No, it's just a blue and a red.
Well, there has to be a green one nearby somewhere. It might be on a different row, but that's probably a component input, video component input that you don't really need to worry about. The thing to do is to try. I'm sure it's back there somewhere. Is a pair of red and white jacks that are an output, not an input.
Yeah, I have that plugged right into the VCR, and the only other component that you can plug into is that digital audio out, and then it has the HDMI, two HDMIs, and then a one USB port, and then it does have two available RC jacks, but there's only two of them, and the color on the tips is red and blue.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, I'm looking. It's on the side of the TV, correct? Oh, we're losing time.
We're losing time here. Let us come back and try and answer that question quickly when we come back. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Joined today by David Vaughn, fellow home theater geek and product reviewer. And man, you've been a great help today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Oh, it's just a pleasure to have you here. You know, having somebody to bounce stuff off of, it's just great. So it's our last segment of the day. Can you believe it? I just can't believe it. The time goes by so fast. Let's see if we can get another call or two in here. Heather, what you got?
Roger in Torrance.
Roger.
Also looking for a recommendation.
Oh, recommendations are us. Roger, hey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Scott, you're awesome.
Thank you so much.
Let me do this real quick. First of all, the Vizio Reference Series, when's it coming out?
Ooh, you and everybody else in the universe is asking that question. Last I heard, you know, I think it's going to be the end of the year. And the reference series, for those of you who don't know, Vizio announced at CES four new lines of TVs, two with the same sort of model number structure, the E series and the M series, and two new ones, the P series, which is 4K or Ultra HD, and the reference series, which is also 4K, but also has this capability of what's called high dynamic range. And boy, oh boy, when you see high dynamic range on a TV capable of reproducing it and the content has it encoded within, there's no going back. It just looks fabulous.
Okay, great. Now, my other question is, I took your advice, bought a VT60 before.
good for you.
But the
good
sound
man.
Is terrible.
What?
So I'm looking at sound bars.
Oh, the sound of the TV.
Yeah. Okay, that's not surprising.
And I looked at Consumer Reports, and the one that you recommended yesterday by Pioneer,
yep,
that's their number 33. So let me read you the top four and see if you've tested any of those.
Okay.
The Sanos Play Bar is their number one.
Sanos?
Sonos.
Yeah. Oh, Sonos.
Sonos Play Bar.
Okay.
Leo has one of those.
Yeah.
The Samsung HW850.
Don't know that one particularly.
And the Sony HTST7.
Yes, that one is very highly regarded.
Okay.
That one is very highly regarded. So that would be a good one. I don't know. You said this was Consumer Reports?
Yes. It's
Boy.
Their Summer Electronics Best.
Now, one thing about Consumer Reports is that they have a very high value quotient that they use when they review something. So if something sounds 80% as good but is 50% less, it'll be rated higher even though the other thing may have sounded better. So you got to keep that in mind.
That's a good point.
Now, one final question. If you had unlimited money was no object, 60 to 65-inch TV, because I still have to get one for my living room.
Mm. 60
not plasma.
And not plasma. Okay, well, boom, you just took me out of the running. If money really was no object, and it's not going to be a plasma in the 60 to 65-inch range,
yes,
I would get a Sony. I believe it or not, I would get a 4K TV. It would be a Sony 950 X950B.
Now, is that the one that has the big speakers on the side?
Yes, it is.
Okay, see, that won't work.
Okay. I'm only thinking of picture quality here.
If right. money was no object, what's the biggest OLED? 55 right now.
Well,
right?
wait till
they're
the...
They're curved.
Yep. It's curved.
Yeah, they're curved, yeah. I'm not
you know, but the LG 77-inch for $30,000 yeah. or so...
Ooh, that's maybe a little too much.
So money is an object,
hey, you
then.
Said money was no object, man. And it is curved. But at 77 inches, I'm almost starting to say curvature is okay. And LG's is very, very slight, slighter than Samsung, actually.
Okay.
But, you know, you said money, no object. But if money is slightly an object.
Now, the Vizio, is that only going to be 55 inch?
No, no. They're going to have the Vizio reference is going to be, I think, 65 and 120.
Oh, so they are going to make a 65. So
I think they are.
Yeah.
So maybe should wait.
I would wait.
I would, too. I would, too. That TV is going to be awesome.
All right. You're the best.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Hey, how about that? Some nice quick calls and answers. I like it. Let's see if we can fit two more in here.
At least, yeah. Jonathan in Rochester.
Jonathan in Rochester, New York. Hey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Hey, hopefully you have two quick questions. Number one, I have DSL coming into a second floor office, into a modem, and then which is hooked directly into my computer, and then out to a wireless router. And that's what I run my Roku off of.
Why do you have the modem going directly to your computer and then out to a router? Why not put the modem into the router?
I'm sorry. I do have to, no, the router comes off the modem.
Okay. All right. So the phone line comes into your house, goes into the modem. Yep. The modem connects by Ethernet to the router, and then the router goes out to your computer and your Roku and everything else.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Got it.
The question is, I have Roku, which is downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
I could have someone come in and run cable, RG6, whatever it's called, through the wires, directly to the back of the TV where I can hardwire the Roku. Okay. Is there any sort of advantage to using the Roku hardwired rather than off my wireless network?
That's yes. Yes, the answer is yes. Media streaming is pretty bandwidth intensive, and if you do it wirelessly, you could easily run into problems from interference with other things. Hardwire, I always recommend hardwire if you possibly can.
Are you having video dropouts now wirelessly?
Buffers a little bit sometimes, not too much. I'm just wondering if I'll see a better picture quality. I've got a Samsung Plasma 1080i.
Probably not.
Maybe I'll see a better picture.
As long as you're not losing the video stream, it's not going to give you better quality per se.
Right. It isn't. It's just going to prevent problems.
Correct.
So I always recommend wired if you can. I have all my media streaming devices wired to my router, with one exception, the Roku streaming stick, which doesn't have the ability to do that. It's wireless. But generally speaking, that's what you want to do.
Okay, and hopefully I can have one real quick.
Sure.
I've got surround sound, and I have ports.
Uh-oh, did we lose them?
So I'm just running basic ports, just cheap. I think it's like a lamp cord, particularly back of my AVR speaker. Is there something wireless that I can use that'll give me good quality so I can get rid of the wires?
Well,
sports.
I'm really sorry to say we lost a good portion of that question because you're either on a cordless phone or maybe VoIP or something. Are you still with us?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Right now I have from the AVR, it's wired directly to the front speakers.
Yeah.
I had it actually ports put in the wall, but they stopped working. Is there any wireless system? Where I can just maybe plug it into the back of the AVR and just maybe have a little receiver on each of the speakers?
There is, actually. Sure. Yes, Atlantic Technology makes such a thing. Aperion makes such a thing that basically takes audio out of your receiver. It's not speaker level. It has to be pre-out level, so not from the amplifiers, but from the pre-outs of your AVR, and that needs to go to powered speakers then.
Right.
It's a bit of a pain in the butt, but it can be done.
But not in his application. Not in his application.
Yeah, not in your application. I don't know of anything you could do to do that. If you're sending power from the amplifier to the speakers, you need wires.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know what? We're coming to the end of a fabulous show, and I want to just tell everybody how great it's been. I've had such support here. Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger, you have just been wonderful. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Great to have you here.
It's great working with you. I've thought about that for years. As soon as you came on here, I said, I've got to go work with Heather, and now I've gotten to. Thank you.
Woo-hoo. Your three wishes have been granted.
No.
Oh, wait, did you have two more?
Seeing the Northern Lights.
Yeah. There you go.
David Vaughn, thank you very much for being here. I sure appreciate that very much.
Thank you for having me, Scott. As always, lots of fun. And thanks to the chat room.
Yes, and thank you to the chat room. You guys have been awesome. Coming up with all kinds of great questions and answers to questions, really. And we've been hanging out here at the in the breaks talking to you guys. And let's see, who else? Oh, John Slanina and Burke McQuinn doing the TD, and Nathan down there choosing all kinds of great music. We're just having a wonderful time here, and I am sad to say it's over. Thanks so much. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't forget, geek out.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.